Congressman John Curtis was in the Uinta Basin for a market visit and town hall meeting Tuesday. Congressman Curtis currently serves as congressman for Utah's 3rd District, which includes the Uinta Basin. Congressman Curtis is also a candidate for U.S. Senate in the seat now being vacated by Mitt Romney. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM KVEL. Mr. Curtis, thank you for taking the time to visit with us today.
Oh, Steve, I always enjoy being on with you on the radio, and thanks for putting me on.
You've spent a lot of time here in the Uinta Basin. What are some of the takeaways from your visit yesterday about the Uinta Basin? For example, what are citizens most concerned about?
Well, I think it's fair to say everywhere you go, they want to talk border, and that's not unique to the basin. That's, you know, throughout the state, and it's probably the number one issue right now federally on people's minds. And we had a lot of conversations about that, and I think second, not too far behind that, is the debt that people are very concerned about.
All right. What are your feelings about the border in general? Could you just kind of share with us your
sure.
general feelings on that?
Oh,
I mean, New York City, Fox News headlines today, New York City begins giving out illegal immigrants prepaid debit cards, $53 million pilot program. And we can't afford it. We're borrowing money that we don't have.
So, listen, people have a right to be absolutely incensed at something like that. And what I saw, I was down at the border just about 3 weeks ago, and it was my third trip down there. And it is worse than you're actually hearing. And the thing that is probably most dramatic that we're not hearing enough about is that the cartels are controlling who's coming over our border, and not us. And it's a bad situation, and it's not just the cost that you mentioned, but it's the fentanyl that's coming across, and there's a lot of reasons to be grumpy about what's happening down there.
Now, the Biden administration is objecting to the term invasion or crisis on the border. Is this an invasion? Would you be comfortable with that term?
Isn't this the same group that wants to call January 6th an invasion? Right? Like
an insurrection? Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. Look, if 2 million people coming across, you can call it what you want, but it's way too many people coming. And by the way, this is not even good for those people coming. I think President Biden would try to make the case that he's doing what's good for them, and it's not. When they come in here and they're not here on a legal basis, they can't work, they can't have the American dream, and it's wrong for them as well.
Governor Abbott has his hands full. He's trying to defend his borders due to this invasion, where the federal government won't. Should states be able to arrest, detain, and deport migrants, illegal immigrants, at the nation's border?
Listen, I totally support everything Governor Abbott's doing. If the federal government won't do it, of course he needs to do it for his residents. And by the way, I actually have a bill pending in Congress that would reimburse not just him, but any state that comes to his aid with enforcement help to make sure they get reimbursed, because they're doing the job the federal government won't do. It should be the federal government's responsibility.
Congressman John Curtis, Friday, the U.S. Senate passed a $1.2 trillion spending bill. Now, there was over 1,000 pages, and it was doubtful anyone really had the time to read and analyze it. How did you vote on that bill, and why?
I voted no, and I'll start with, anytime you don't give me enough time to read a bill, I'm going to vote no. So at the high level, I voted no for that. I also voted no because we're just spending too much money as a country. Now, I will acknowledge that this was one of our better budgets in a long time, but it was still too much. And I also would have been more supportive if we were able to put some Republican priorities in there, like the border, forcing things like Remain in Mexico policy. And we weren't able to include any of that as well.
Now, I understand there were provisions for border security, but it was more for the processing these immigrants into the country than it was for actually.
Yeah. So there's a small win there, but the win would have been forcing the president to institute Remain in Mexico. That doesn't cost the United States a penny, and I'm convinced it would solve about 90% of the problem down there.
There's a lot of pork in this, from what I understand, at least from the news reports that have come out. Massive spending in green energy, environmental priorities, bigger government, expansion of entitlement programs, pet projects for Democratic leadership. And included in that pork is another round of student loan debt forgiveness. Yeah. Now, we've already paid $130 billion for student loan forgiveness. I ask you a direct question. Should a truck driver who's listening to this program right now in the Uinta Basin pay for someone else's education?
Absolutely not, under no circumstances. And it's not just the truck driver. It's every single one of us that are being asked to subsidize somebody who made a promise to pay it back. Right? Like, what are we teaching people if we say, look, you don't have to keep your commitments? Why would anybody pay their mortgage? Why would anybody pay their car payment? If this is the answer, that's a bad answer.
Federal deficit is, in 1990, we were $4 trillion in debt, which I thought at that time was an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah.
Now the federal deficit today is over $34 trillion. What poses more of a threat to future generations, to your children, to your grandchildren and mine, climate change or growing federal deficit?
Yeah, well, there's no way I can answer that question other than the deficit, right? Like, it threatens us in so many ways. It weakens the foundation of our country. Imagine if we have a strategic war and we don't have the resources to fight it. I mean, there's just a lot of problems with that debt that should cause everybody listening to this program to be grumpy.
Now, this is more of a state issue. However, I think the federal government regarding the Green River and the Colorado River comes into play with this a little bit. Representative Scott Chu, who you're familiar with, is our representative here. Spoke at the Vernal Area. Good guy, isn't he? Spoke at the Vernal Area Chamber of Commerce meeting last Tuesday, and one part of his comments were agriculture, and this is a quote from him, and I'd like to get you to comment on it. Agriculture, he said, is on the forefront of water conservation, and agriculture is the only reason we've got our fingers in the Colorado River water. Otherwise, California would have it all. He went on to say that agriculture is not the villain. Agriculture is the hero. In your opinion, is agriculture being targeted by environmental groups?
Yes, it is. It reminds me a lot of the fossil fuel situation as well, where the fossil fuel industry was targeted by the environmentalists. And I just keep shouting from the housetops, look, the fossil fuel industry is part of the solution, not the problem. And I would say the same with our farm community. They're part of the solution, not the problem. And just like fossil fuels, the agricultural community knows how to navigate this, and we should be listening to them. And look, they'll bring the best ideas to the table. And if we don't involve them and don't give them ownership, then they will feel demonized, and they should. And we've got to make sure that doesn't happen.
Donald Trump is in court more than he is on the campaign trail. As a matter of fact, in New York, he was given a $454 million judgment. Now, keep in mind, there were no victims in this, and it was, anyway, do you feel that this was a fair trial? And also, do you feel that the judicial system is being used to harm political opponents?
Well, I think it's been very evident, and I would point specifically to the one I think that's the most glaring is Colorado's vote to keep him off the ballot, which was then followed by other states, and the Supreme Court coming back and saying 9-0. 9-0.
Even the liberal justices were
against this. Even the liberal justices said, no, you guys are out of bounds on this. And I'm really proud of the Supreme Court and grateful for those liberal justices that they were willing to do that. So what's interesting, though, is it's the more they come after President Trump, the better he does in the polls. It's almost like they're unwittingly helping him, because the more that they come after him, the more that his supporters lean into supporting him.
Likewise, is the judicial system, in your mind, in your opinion, being used to further the environmental agenda?
Well, I think I first
case in point, our railroad.
Absolutely. And look, I'm going to acknowledge we've got the best legal system on the planet, and that doesn't mean it's perfect, right? It doesn't mean it can't be taken advantage of. So I want to be careful and not like throwing the whole thing under the bus. But the railroad is a really good example where they've been able to use it. And another place you see it is in just permitting, whether it's a nuclear plant, a pipeline, or even a solar farm. The judicial system is keeping these things from coming to fruition.
I don't think there's any doubt in the average person's mind, or at least the logical person's mind, that there is a weaponization of federal agencies targeting conservative groups and the citizens who are conservative. For example, the IRS, the DOJ, the EPA, the FBI. You could probably name more alphabets along with that. What are your feelings about weaponization of federal agencies against someone like former President Donald Trump or conservative organizations? How does that strike you?
Yeah, so one of the things Kevin McCarthy did early on was set up a weaponization task force. And Republicans really wanted to get examples out there of these agencies that had gone awry. And the task force has done some work, but I'm hoping that they can do a much more complete work and do a much better job of documenting where these agencies have gone awry and how we get them fixed.
Do you support Mike Johnson as the Speaker of the House?
So Mike is a good person. He's a God-fearing person.
Seems like it. I really like him.
He is. But he has been thrust into a near impossible situation. It takes years to build up a staff to do what he's doing. And, he took up where Kevin left off. And you just got to give the guy some runway does that make sense, to get things going his way. He had to take the negotiations that were already handed to him by his predecessor. And listen, if you want an honest, hardworking, God-fearing leader, he's the guy.
Baby boomers are hitting the Social Security system. Larry Fink, yeah. BlackRock CEO, I don't know where he gets his power from, probably just because of the control he has monetarily over the country.
Yeah.
Is he calling for the reform of Social Security? Should Social Security age limit be expanded, say from 67 to 70?
Yeah, I think that there's a way to talk about this that where we don't need to threaten people who feel like the carpet's being taken out from underneath them. The answer to your question is, if you're talking about somebody who's 60 or 55 or 50, no, under no circumstances. But if you're talking about my 29-year-old kid, I do think that's a legitimate conversation, who is living longer, who, his life expectancy is longer. I think we need to have that conversation. But what happens is when we bring that up, we tend to make everybody near Social Security feel like, we're going to pull the rug out from underneath them. And I think we need to make sure that they understand that nobody's coming after them and that they need to be protected. But that doesn't mean we can't have a conversation about our 20-year-olds.
There was a terror attack recently in Moscow. I think ISIS-K is taking credit for that. Including FBI Director Christopher Wray, reported to Congress that we're more vulnerable. Are we more vulnerable than we were 4 years ago when President Biden took office? And what does this have to do with the border?
Yeah, absolutely, because anybody can walk across that border, and even people that will do us harm. And look, if you and I were bad guys, how would we get into the country, right? It's easy. And I think that's, among other things, reasons why we should be concerned about what's happening down there.
The environmental community, as you know, because you're the founder of the Conservative Climate Caucus as our congressman, the environmental community has been successful in spreading misinformation about the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah.
Will your effort to educate U.S. Congress as you move into the Senate, members about the truth of fossil fuel extraction methods, be abated?
So I will just tell you, I'll brag for just a little bit. I have been in dozens of states around the country. I've been to multiple countries outside the United States, shouting from the housetops this message. And the message is that U.S. fossil fuels are part of our energy future and also part of our solution to our energy future. And I love to tell stories like yesterday I was out on an oil rig in the basin. And
you're on an oil rig?
Yeah, in the basin.
Did you?
It was a lot of fun.
Did you have some coveralls on and everything?
We got the coveralls, the glasses, the hat, and because I want to see firsthand. And what I see firsthand is the large amounts of money that this industry is putting into their energy future. And part of that is massive movements towards cleaner, affordable, reliable fuel. And I tell that story, and I tell the story around the world about how our fossil fuels will actually reduce emissions around the world. If you want to reduce emissions, then you need to be using U.S. fossil fuels, and you can reduce more emissions than you can with the Green New Deal. And I just want your listeners to know that's my message, and I shout it from the housetops around the world, trying to change the narrative that we're actually part of the solution here in the basin and not the problem.
During your many visits here in the Uinta Basin, I'm sure you've had time to visit the Deseret power plant.
Yes.
What are your feelings, and what would you share with someone about the Deseret power plant as far as emissions are concerned?
Yeah. So I also represent Emery County and Carbon County, and you know, we've got similar plants down there. And I think what's happening is wrong. And one of the things that's happening is they're having a hard time buying coal because Germany's buying so much coal and paying so much for it. And China's opening a coal plant almost on a weekly basis. At the very least, it's one every other week that China's opening up. So why are we closing down our coal plants and turning a blind eye to China opening up a new plant per week? And you can see why people in these communities feel like they're being mistreated and that this is hypocrisy. And I think we've got to do a lot better job of expressing what's going on and making sure people see the hypocrisy.
China is purchasing large swaths of farmland in the United States. I don't know what their motive is behind that. One could only guess. They are an enemy of the United States in my mind. Should Congress step in and do something about this? Limit their ability to purchase up our resources?
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you about China for a whole hour. Let me just say
that is a big subject.
I'm deeply concerned about China. They're stealing our intellectual property. They're stealing our data. They're using slave labor, and they've been accused of genocide, and I believe that's accurate, of the Uyghurs. And I've been so aggressive against China. I'm proud to tell your listeners there's actually a warrant for my arrest in China.
There is?
And there is a warrant for my arrest because of my legislation reigning in their aggressiveness.
Well, so, congratulations.
I know. I think it's a badge of honor.
It is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of China, the U.S. Senate will likely vote soon on whether or not to ban TikTok from... this has already passed the House. How did you vote on that, and why?
So I had the chance to vote on it twice. The first one is in committee, where it passed 50-0, and that doesn't happen very often.
Wow.
And then I voted for it on the House floor. And let me tell your listeners very clearly that TikTok is misrepresenting this. They say it's a ban on TikTok. It's not. It's simply an insistence that it can't be owned by the Chinese. And if you ask why, you know, listeners want to know, well, why, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that is that gives the Chinese government information about over 100 million U.S. users on TikTok and their ability to control them. And let me just give you an example of their ability to control. The day we were voting on this bill, TikTok locked out its users unless they put in their zip code, and it required them to call the member of Congress to complain about the legislation. So imagine if TikTok used that same power the day of the election to say, you can't access your account until you watch this video about how we want you to vote on a particular candidate. And you can see that this is a very dangerous tool when it's owned by an adversary. So I get and understand that many Americans like their tool of TikTok, and we're not trying to take that away at all. But we don't want the Chinese government to be able to have control over that.
Understood. Other social media platforms, should they be allowed to censor political content or educational content they disagree with?
Steve, you'll appreciate this. When we have hearings on this, my Republican colleagues all ask why the social media companies censored something, and my Democratic colleagues all ask why they didn't censor more. And so it's interesting. Both parties are mad at social media, but for different reasons. And what's happened is we've given like a license to somebody to decide what's good and what's bad. And listen, we all struggle our whole lives to understand what's truth and what's not truth. How is somebody at a social media company going to get that right? And there's some really notable examples. If you look no further than COVID, where for a while, we thought that COVID was spread on metal surfaces and we wouldn't let kids play on playgrounds. So anybody who would have put a post in that said that's wrong would have been censured. And for a while we said masks are no good, and then we said you have to have masks, and then we said you have to double mask, and none of that science was solid. And yet somebody at those social media companies was getting to make a decision about what should be allowed and what's not. And the problem is there really is no way for human beings to be able to make those decisions. And now multiply that by the millions of posts per day, and you really think that somebody's going to be able to do that with any degree of accuracy? And who gets to make those decisions about what should be censored and what shouldn't be? And that to me is a great concern.
Now, I'm not a big fan of governmental agencies and the control that they have on industry, but this radio station and thousands of other radio stations and television stations across the United States are regulated by the FCC. For example, I can't endorse you as a political candidate. I can't put harmful materials on this radio station. And there's a whole list of regulations that are there to safeguard and protect the public. Why can't we do the same thing? And would you be in favor of that with social media? Maybe that's a really complicated question. Yeah. I don't know.
So I think, on one hand it's complicated, but on the other it's not. If we use that same comparison, imagine if we, instead of saying to you, look, there's certain swear words you can't say, or, there's certain things you can't do.
Seven words, right? Like,
yeah, which we won't go over, obviously.
No. Right?
But imagine if we said, oh, wait a minute, Steve, that post, that those comments you just made about this new outbreak of a disease, you can't do that. We're not going to let you do that. And I think the difference of what we're talking about here with social media is not at a high level, look, there's certain words you can't say, or there's certain principles you have to follow, but we're actually going to get into your free speech. And I think that's where we're crossing the line of, okay, well, it's one thing to say, all right, we're going to prohibit these seven words, but it's quite another to say, I mean, what if this got into religion and we prohibited you from discussing your religion on the radio? What if this got into...
Well, there's First Amendment issues that protect that, aren't there?
Yes, but there's First Amendment that protects our general speech as well. And my point is, like, the moment you cross that line of saying, okay, I get to decide what you say and what you don't say, it's a very dangerous place to go. And I think with radio, with TV, we have found a pretty happy place with what's generally accepted by society of what those boundaries are. And now we're jumping into a whole new world trying to expand those boundaries. And I think that expansion of those boundaries is where we're running into trouble.
Final question, as we're running out of time. Seats in the U.S. Congress are determined by population. Question for you, Congressman Curtis, is how will the 7.9 million illegal aliens flooding cities like Chicago, L.A., New York, et cetera, affect the census, and what effect will that have on the future congressional seats and Congress as general?
Yeah, it's a terrible answer. Your question is, it will impact it, and they will be counted. We actually have some municipalities who want to give them voting rights as well. And you can see why there's a motivation by the other side to flood the cities with millions of people and tilt the scales. And it has huge ramifications in many ways. And, particularly giving them voting rights, you can see why this is something that concerns many of your listeners.
In your mind, do you think this is a motive behind the border crisis, opening the borders?
Yeah, I think of some. I think if we're honest, there's a host of motivations. There are some of my Democratic colleagues who just think it's the humane thing to do. I radically disagree with them. There's others who have, an objective from a census perspective. I think there's a number of motives out there, none of which are good. And by the way, to get to those motives, you have to do something that's illegal.
Congressman John Curtis, as I mentioned earlier, is running for U.S. Senate as Utah's senator in the seat being vacated by Mitt Romney. Congressman Curtis, what are your final thoughts as we close this discussion?
Yes. I'm so glad you gave me a chance. I really want to double down on how much I've enjoyed serving the basin. And by the way, there's a Meet the Candidate coming up a week from this Saturday. It's a week from Saturday. All the candidates will be coming out there at the Convention Center at 4 p.m. I'll be out there again. And just want to make sure all your listeners know how much I enjoy serving them.
Well, you're invited back on the radio station anytime you're in the area. We'd love to have you here and have you know, carry on this discussion further.
I love it. Thanks.
Congressman Curtis, thank you for joining us. This is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. I'm Steve Evans. It's been great to have you along with this conversation with us. Thanks for joining us.